Yeah, so I heard about this Bitcoin thing once. I heard some internet money that people are using.
It's like the tulips.
The tulip bubbles, yeah. It's tulips on the digital age. What is up, freaks? It's your boy, Marty Bent, here for an episode of Rabbit Hole Recap with our boy, Matt O'Dell. Matt, what's going on?
Life's good.
We've been sitting here just like doing research for the last hour. We were supposed to start this an hour ago. We've just been sitting here shooting the shit about everything that's been going on. Big week, inside and outside of Bitcoin.
Well, we ate lunch first.
Did eat lunch.
Came back here.
Yeah, we're allowed to talk about what we talked about at lunch?
Has it been a good day? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
Sleeper project.
Nothing too... could be very cool, actually.
Could be fucking awesome.
Yeah, before we jump into it, we got a lot to talk about today. Price, of course, as always, been pumping a little bit in the last hour or so. We're at $8,231.70, according to the TradeBlock XBX Index. According to my node, we're at block 580,571. And there are currently 24,181 transactions in the mempool, higher than where we were last week. This episode of Tales of the Crypt was brought to you by the Cash App. You freaks know all about them. First P2P app in the App Store, which has also been the number one finance app in the App Store for the last 2 years, is now allowing you to buy Bitcoin, helping you stack sats, helping you save money at merchants with their Boost program. Go get that personalized Boost card, put a Bitcoin on it, put your signature on it, get that. And they just added more merchants this week. They added DoorDash, and Popeyes, I noticed. Pretty boss additions to the Boost list. Again, I use my Boost every day.
Have you ever used DoorDash?
I have never used DoorDash, but I might be inclined to now that it's 15% off via the Boost.
That's a good reason. I have never used it either.
I'm Postmates guy myself.
Yeah.
Or Grubhub.
Seamless.
Yeah, Seamless. Seamless and Grubhub are like one company now, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, not talking about other apps. We're talking about the Cash App. Go to your local app store and download the Cash App today. Google Play Store, Apple, iTunes.
Your number one finance app on both Android and Apple.
Pretty badass.
For like 5 months now or 6 months now?
2 years.
Crazy. 2 years?
Yes.
That's insane.
2 years.
And you can buy Bitcoin through it. That's crazy. No one talks about that enough.
Yeah. Oh, wait. And let's, this is not part of the ad rate or anything, but let's give a shout out. This isn't even on our list. To Square Crypto, they announced their first hire yesterday.
Moneyball.
Steve Lee, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Steve Lee. He's a PM at Google at one point. He's a product manager type working on UX and stuff like that. Is a mensch when it comes to that stuff. So it seems like a very quality hire for their first open or contribution to Bitcoin.
Yeah, seriously impressive, dude. Happy for both of them.
Yeah.
It's good for Bitcoin.
Yeah. Apparently Gary Fox didn't last too long.
Big win. Yeah, they sent out a joke tweet first that they hired a new intern, Gary Fox, and then I kinda dug it.
With a name like Gary Fox, you should be going doing porn. You shouldn't be interning at Square.
It was spelled F-U-C-H-S, so it was a little bit more.
F-U-C-H-E-S. Fouches.
Yeah, there you go.
Gary Fouches.
This was a little more subtle.
Shout out to Gary, wherever you are, man. Hope you're doing well.
Poor Gary.
If you've got a thundercock, maybe you can make it in the porn industry. You got the name for it. I don't know if you can follow it up with the anatomy. We also got three contributor shout outs this week. I actually missed one last week. I'm going to read that first. And that was American HODL. He said, ABA boys, always be accumulating. Much love from American HODL. Thanks to that.
We got three shout-outs.
One we can't read, though. We have to explain why we can't.
I love American HODL.
Here's our second one. We're being forced to do a show on July 12th, it looks like. All right, friends, a special shout-out to our homie 100M Satoshi on Twitter, at 100M Satoshi, for coming up with this brilliant idea, Bitcoin by the Blocks Demystified. A special show airing July 12th, where we will cover the basics of Bitcoin. Submit your questions, thoughts, etc., and we will address them all.
How is that allowed? How are we allowing people to announce shows that we're doing on our shout-outs?
I don't know.
Just announced that show.
This is what anarchy looks like, Matt.
I didn't know anything about this. I'm doing this show?
It looks like we're doing the show now.
I'm excited.
Should we just do this one? Should we do this one because we didn't
specify
that it's in the rules?
It was bold. I appreciate it. We're definitely going to do it. Maybe we'll have them on too.
Yeah, let's just not make this a habit. I don't want
people just getting directing shows. Yeah, Well, it seems like a good idea, right? Yeah. So that's important. Yeah. Like, if you shill a bad idea, like, we will not shout it out.
Yeah, so I guess you could send questions in for the July 12th show. Where are we going to be July 12th? I don't even know where I'm going to be.
Well, it's the week after July 4th.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably won't be away because you do the nice vacation on July 4th.
Yeah, so...
I'm not really sure what the show is supposed to be.
Bitcoin by the Blocks demystified, dude.
What does that even mean? Do we, like, pick topics?
I guess if you guys have any questions about Bitcoin basics that you want to send them in. We'll listen to them. Or, excuse me, we'll read them. We'll answer them to the best
like
of our abilities.
Question and answer show?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Oh, well, that's a great idea.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you shill great ideas in our shout-outs, we will execute on your great ideas.
Yes, and so we're going to execute on this one. So any of you potentially newcomers, newer freaks out there who have basic questions, it seems like this is for your rudimentary Bitcoiner or your newer Bitcoiner. So if you have any questions, simple questions that you may think is a dumb question, there's no such thing as a dumb question, ask us and we'll try to answer it.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm as well. A lot to talk about this week. I think we're gonna go over an hour.
Oh, well, we had a third shout out that was
This is true.
Basically like an advertisement for a product.
Yeah, an advertisement for a product.
Yeah, we're not doing that. Yeah. We're gonna send the money back. So don't try and advertise your product in the shout outs.
Yes, please don't.
Thank you.
And yes, send me an address and we will send back those Satoshis, those sats. The shout out's just a fun interactive thing that we want to do.
Well, I mean, ideally it'd be great if we could go to a full contributor model, but it's right now it's the accumulation mode and everyone should be, you know,
everyone's stacking sats. They want to be spending sats.
Yeah. Should be stacking as many sats as possible. And hopefully when the bull does come, we can switch to a full contributor model.
We'll see.
And like, look at the White Rabbit BTC sent us coasters and glasses, Bitcoin whiskey glasses, and fucking coasters that are laser etched, I guess.
Yeah, stay humble, stack sats.
That's fucking dope.
Shout out to White Rabbit BTC
on Twitter.
Huge come up. Whiskey glasses as well. Thank you for that. We're enjoying whiskey in the glasses right now.
We're drinking out of the glasses he sent us.
Yeah, it's great.
It was genius. He was like, everyone's sending you alcohol. No one sent you glasses and coasters.
It's perfect. Thank you again. This is very enjoyable. My wife even likes these. She's thinks they fit in aesthetically with the rest of our glassware. So
cheers.
Good for having the same sort of design think as my wife. Let's get into the topics. What do we want to talk about first? There's a lot to talk about.
We could talk about, let's talk about this proposed India ban.
Yes. So in India, there's a proposed ban that's banning all cryptocurrencies. And I believe there's what's being presented is if you get caught using them, there will be a 10-year prison sentence. Is that correct?
Yes. If you even hold it, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. So it's not just buying or selling or
it's possessing.
It's so full criminalization.
Yeah. And this is really, pushing Bitcoin's use case to the fore. Like it's really going to test whether or not the argument of plausible deniability, plays out in real life.
Well, first of all, it's only proposed and judging from our own country, I imagine, you know, you could just have some, you know, hardcore, super extremist person propose a bill just for PR sake, right? And then everyone writes articles about it and people that don't know the politics. So it could just be like a fringe-esque bill that has no chance of getting passed or just a proposal.
That's very possible. It's just something that somebody saw and wanted to get clicks.
And it makes a great article. Yeah.
It does, yeah.
But like people should expect it, right? Especially in India. I mean, India banned large cash bills. Remember when they had like the lines where they had to trade in their bills?
Yes, this is true. But this is actually an interesting caveat or nuance to the situation in India. Somebody hopped into my DMs. We had a conversation about India earlier this week and they were saying historically Indians, just as a culture, culturally, are very good at sort of skirting particularly the capital controls laws and this person in my DMs was talking about like the 200 years of British colony rule, they sort of ignored a lot of the laws that they were trying to throw at them anyway. And then there's a lot of gold laws, obviously, as well.
That's why they love that, gold. They love gold there.
Yeah, they go ignored. So maybe Indian culture will just continue to do what it's done best for the last few centuries and figure out ways to sort of skirt around these edicts, if it even does go through.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing but respect for Indians. I do think that they will probably ban it at some point. They will crack down. I mean, they've been known to crack down in the past. And it's super interesting because they are, I think they're the second most populous country in the world, right?
Most like populous, yeah.
A billion people or something?
Way more than a billion people, yeah. At least 1.2, I believe.
That's crazy. And there's like 30 million Bitcoiners right now. So, should be interesting to see how it plays out in India. But like, if your government is the type of government that's going to crack down on this stuff, then Bitcoin should be more valuable for you. Like, well, you live in a society where that is, Bitcoin is absolutely necessary.
We wanted to end it on macro talk, but it seems like we're just naturally going to segue into the rest of the macro talk. So India...
Yeah, we'll just start with macro, and then we'll go to more Bitcoin focus.
Yeah, so like, India is just one case of the government cracking down on potentially cracking down on Bitcoin in particular. But I wrote about it in the Bent today, and have been following sort of the macro events over the course of the last few weeks, and things are getting a lot more frothy on the international landscape, especially after last weekend. We'll start with Hong Kong. So, like in Hong Kong, you have people taking to the streets, marching. Did we talk about this last week?
No, we did not.
I don't believe we talked about it.
Also, it's 1.34 billion.
Yeah.
Is India. Okay, yeah. Continue. We did not talk about Hong Kong.
Yeah, so Hong Kong over the weekend, obviously, I'm sure most of you freaks have seen by this point, a million plus people in the streets protesting a law that is about to be passed in their local government that would allow extradition of Hong Kongers to China. It is Hong Kongers. That's the correct term.
Is it really Hong Kongers?
Yes.
You looked it up for the Bent?
Yeah.
I gave him a look.
Yeah. So the reason they're hitting the streets is the basically unlawful extradition of people in Hong Kong, which is supposed to be semi-autonomous from mainland China. And this is not good. This does not bode well for the people of Hong Kong or people that own real estate in Hong Kong. So another thing that is important to highlight here is that Hong Kong's the most expensive real estate market in the world right now. You have a lot of Western expats living in Hong Kong, basically depending on the semi-autonomy of the territory from mainland China. And this extradition law, if passed, would severely impede on that autonomy that exists right now.
And people are using it as like a store of value vehicle too.
Yes.
You know, buying real estate in Hong Kong.
Yes.
Totally respect the protesters out in Hong Kong. It's amazing.
They are some of the most organized and smart protesters. Did you see what they're doing with the gas cans?
The tear gas. Where they pour water on it.
Very inspiring. And then on top of that, again, you actually have this in the show notes. Niraj pointed out why cashless societies are terrible. The protesters, they're so afraid to be identified because the police in Hong Kong eventually upgraded the protest from a protest to a riot. So if anybody were arrested, they could have done jail time. And the way you're able to track people via their MTA cards.
And the cameras.
So they all had face masks on.
Well, it's good because they wear the air pollution masks, right? So they're like, oh, I'm just protecting from air pollution. I'm not trying to cover my face.
Yeah. But they were for the first, like, you never see, apparently in Hong Kong, you never see people actually using cash to buy tickets for the train station.
Yeah, the octopus cards is super easy. Because I was just there in January.
Yeah, so what was it like?
It's pretty crazy seeing it on TV. I don't watch TV. Seeing it on, like, the computer, video computer. I think, first of all, you see, you know, Hong Kong is like a super connected society, right? So they've learned not only from their own protests, they had the Umbrella Movement a couple years ago.
In 2014. And it's important to talk about the Umbrella Movement because the Umbrella Movement was over the fact that mainland China, the Xi regime wanted to have a screening of the politicians that would be elected in Hong Kong. So that was like the first step of maybe trying to posture to get people with it, like to sort of Trojan horse people into Hong Kong. And now that precedent could have led to this law being passed. I'm not sure if the that law ever got passed after the umbrella.
I think I'm not positive either, but I'm pretty sure People's Republic of China won most of that shit.
Yeah. So this is the next iteration, and do a little Hong Kong history. Hong Kong was leased by the British Empire for 99 years between.
Well, it wasn't like a real lease because like the British owned that shit, and then as like penance,
yes,
they said, "Well, we'll just lease it from you. We'll give it back to you, but we'll lease it for 99 years." And then they were turned in like 97, I think.
Officially, yes.
Yeah.
But again, so.
And then since then, China said it's like. What was the saying? Like two nations? Or I don't know. It was like they have like a two government rule or whatever. The idea was that it was going to be separate and like autonomous. But everyone, it's obviously that's bullshit. And they've slowly creeped in. And I mean, you see it. You just see it like interacting with people from Hong Kong. Like they know this is coming. Like people were getting censored after. And threatened after the umbrella movement and how that went down. And I remember saying to myself, like, it's pretty amazing to me that this is such a expensive real estate market. Like, I can't even imagine owning like a $60 million building. And just like at any moment, like the People's Republic of China can come in and make it worthless.
Yeah, there was actually a really good Real Vision interview that came out last week. Raoul Paul from Real Vision interviewed Kyle Bass. And Kyle Bass basically explained his investment thesis for a short Hong Kong play and went into the real estate fact. And he mentioned towards the end of the interview that he has a bunch of Western friends that have been living in Hong Kong their whole lives who have for the first time sold their houses and moved because they're so afraid of this stuff. So
even just living there, let alone investment, like I can't imagine,
especially with this extradition clause, like if that gets like,
and it was like kind of like it was separate, like we went through different customs, the customs was super easy, you know, the currency was pegged to the dollar, but like at the same time, like in the middle of the city is like a massive communist building, you know, like how can you escape that? Like they're like right across the way handling everything.
Yeah. So this is, it just highlights a use case for Bitcoin.
Like if I was in Hong Kong, like, can you imagine like you keep money in a bank account or WeChat or something, WePay. You know, I think there was an article in the BBC that Niraj posted recently about talking about how WePay is how prevalent it is that if you get blocked from WePay, like you're just like disconnected from society there. So like imagine you have like your savings in there. They catch you on a camera or they catch you using your Octopus card in like a protest zone and they just take your money, to just block your money. Like that's where Bitcoin really shines, right? Like that value prop is clearly obvious. Like, do you want to have your money stuck in a building that's like on land that's right, you know, next to the People's Republic of China that's bearing down on you? Or do you want to have it transportable anywhere around the world?
12 words liquid. On a piece of paper.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. We just spent a good amount of time on that. That's just one macro story that we've touched on.
But I want to continue here. The two things that were interesting about this protest is not only did they learn from their past protests, but they're such a connected society that they were able to learn from like pretty much any protest that's ever happened, like through the internet. One of the things that's interesting about Hong Kong is even though in mainland China, like the internet is censored, in Hong Kong it isn't. You know, it's probably like all surveilled, but it's not the full firewall, Chinese firewall. And a lot of the coordination was happening through Telegram, and they're operating in Telegram group chats. And you have to keep in mind in Telegram group chats, like you're only as strong as your weakest link. Like anybody in that group chat, if it's a public group chat, could be like a mole or screenshotting or just have bad security. Their phone could be owned or something. And on top of that, so not only is there reports of the Chinese having moles inside of the Telegram group chats, Telegram experienced a DDoS last night. where they were just getting hit super hard from Chinese IPs taking down their servers.
Really?
Yeah.
So, so they're retaliating.
Yeah, I mean, it was cyber warfare during a protest to try and quell a protest.
We live in interesting times, man. What the fuck? It's crazy.
Yeah, you got this. Is like the kind of shit you have to like work into your threat models when you talk about these systems.
Yeah, no, and it's, and again, that's another Ben I wrote earlier this week. Is like it's hard to be a skeptic out here. Like the concept of a permabear, and obviously Bitcoiners are inherently skeptical, and are, let's be honest, we are talking and buying Bitcoin because we think there's a potential for a financial calamity, or not calamity, there's potential for calamity, yes, but tumult in the future. But again, just looking around the world right now, there's so much going on. Like today even, that's the next part, we'll go in the macro talk, like the Strait of Hormuz, there was a tanker that was bombed. And right before we went on air, Pompeo, what is he, the Secretary of State?
I think so, yeah.
He came out and then blamed it on Iran. So, like, those are, that just inherently in my mind, I hate it that it is this way, but I'm just, like, inherently skeptical, and false flag is the first thing that comes to mind. It's too perfect. We're in a trade war with China.
They're saying it was a torpedo from Iran, right?
Yes. We're in a trade war with China. If oil prices go up during a trade war, that benefits us significantly. At the same time, our biggest ally in the Middle East is Saudi Arabia, and they really don't like Iran. So there's...
So it could be like a Saudi false flag.
That as well. And then on top of that, like, why the fuck would Iran just bomb a random oil tanker?
What does that get them?
Exactly.
I mean, the real reason... the U.S. and the Saudis want to attack Iran is because they have some of the cheapest Bitcoin mining costs in the world.
It's true.
It's a good motive. It's a good motive. That's what the future wars will be about. I guess that's what they're about now, because it's all about energy.
Yeah, but...
So what happened to the oil price? The oil price went up, right?
Let me check FinViz.
It has to go up in this situation, because that's one of like the main channels, right?
Yeah, it's the Strait of
Kuwait needs it too, right?
The Strait of Hormuz is the busiest canal, or excuse me, waterway in the world. That's where a lot of the oil trade goes down.
Busiest waterway for oil in the world, right?
Yeah, crude oil is up to 52 today.
So it went up.
It went up. Nothing crazy.
Do you remember when it was like in the hundreds?
Oh yeah, I was in high school. Yeah. Fucking driving to school every day.
They said it was never going to be under 100 again. They like did the Charlie Shrem tweet, but for oil.
Yeah, so oil today, oil was up, it was up like 1.5%, 2% today.
Yeah, it's got to go up on that news.
Yeah, it's up 225 bips today.
Well, we'll see what information comes out.
Yeah, we'll see what comes out. I hate that I'm inherently skeptical about it, though.
Well, you know, it also boosts ratings going into an election cycle.
Yes. But are you tired of being a pawn in these geopolitical games?
Trump wants to be like a wartime president. You could tell.
Yeah. No, and Pompeo, I'm pretty sure he's like a war hawk as well.
I don't really know much about him.
Neither do I.
I imagine so.
Give peace a chance, people.
Everyone's a war hawk.
Give peace a chance. We'll get on from the Strait of Hormuz. Italy today announced that they proposed in their Congress or their government, whatever they have, proposed a bill that would tax people's safety deposit box and savings in banks, just as retail deposits in Italian banks are hitting like recent all-time highs, and again, this is another sort of raging hot, like,
so where
throbbing.
Where should Italians keep their money, Marty? Is anywhere safe? Should they just take out cash and put it in their underneath their mattresses?
I heard about this crazy internet money called Bitcoin. A lot of the nerds are picking it up and storing money there. I don't know. It's too volatile, though. The price is up and down. You never know where it's going to be. You got to know how to use a computer.
Everyone says they want a stable coin, but really what you want is just a coin that always goes up in price.
In all seriousness, though, you want a coin that you know you have possession of and that you have control of. Nobody can take it.
It's huge. For Italian, if I was Italian right now, what I would be doing, I mean, I'm fucking American, and what I'm doing is trying to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. But that's what I would be doing if I was an Italian, if I was in Hong Kong,
if
I was in Iran.
Let's just walk through the absurdity of a tax on safety deposit boxes. Like, you're talking about literally going in and raiding people's savings.
But how does that work? Are they, like, market selling my diamonds? Like, how does that...
Maybe they're getting an evaluation firm or something to value the amount in your safety deposit box and then sending you a tax check after that.
But they're not doing it right away, right? They're not doing it yet, right?
No, it's proposed.
So, like, who would be an idiot? Like, are the banks just, like, packed with people going to their safety deposit box? Like, if I read this article, like, there'd be not... I would just leave them a note, like, hi.
If we have any Italian listeners out there that have run to a bank today, please let us know. Is this noise? Is this fluff? Or is this something that scares you? That's going on. We're not even done yet.
Wait. And they can't print their own currency because they're in the EU. So instead, they're coming out with this quasi-currency bond thing, right?
An iBot?
MBot?
MBot?
Aren't they called MBots? I don't know. But it's like this. It's like a mini bond. I think it's MBot because I think it's a mini bond. If that's possible.
Yeah, it's just like an overt...
But you can pay taxes with it, and you can pay other expenses with it, which is like what a currency is. So they're like it's like a loophole around being able to print their own currency.
They can pay their taxes with it? That sounds like legal tender.
Yeah, exactly. But they're calling it I'm pretty sure they're calling it a mini bond. Interesting.
Interesting.
Strange times we live in.
Strange times we have in. So that's Italy. Let's go north to Germany. The German 10-year bond is trading at negative 24 bips. Earlier today, and has been treading water in negative territory for the last couple of weeks as its biggest bank, Deutsche Bank, reaches historic low stock prices. And it's just another example of, and that's the second European country we've talked about, of somewhat precarious situation in the financial markets out there. Like, all is not well, particularly in the euro. Euro might be the place to start. It might start in Germany with Deutsche Bank. Obviously, the Italian government is underfunded right now, is looking for ways to fund their wasteful ways. They've decided to go after safety deposit boxes. And then now we have the Federal Reserve here posturing like they're going to cut rates in upcoming meetings.
So that means more all-time highs, right, Marty?
We've got to shill responsibly here.
It probably means, I'm saying for the S&P, like,
oh,
they cut rates.
Yes.
The market's going to probably keep going up for a little bit more, at least.
Yeah, when Bullard came out last week and postured like he would like rate cuts, the market rallied.
So, like, rate cuts are probably good for Bitcoin, right?
We'll see.
In both the short term and the long term. Because the short term, rate cuts are good because it's just expansionary and there's more loose money and people are putting it into a risk investment like Bitcoin in the developed world.
Yeah.
Right. And then in a long term, it will lead to probably like some kind of financial calamity. And Bitcoin, how do you think Bitcoin responds in that situation? Bitcoin probably, I would say that Bitcoin would probably get fucked a little bit in the beginning.
It'd be sell off.
And then but long term it would actually accelerate probably in that situation as people flock to it as like a safe haven.
Well, this is what we were talking about at lunch too, right? So like in 08, like we have another 08. This is trying to jump into and have a thought experiment about the psychology of the markets. Like, so yeah, if the Fed does cut rates in an upcoming meeting, it means
which they will.
It means that they had 3.5 years, I believe, maybe not even 3.5 years, but 3.5 years of tightening, of raising rates after 7.5 years of the most aggressive monetary expansion the world has ever seen. So they couldn't even they expanded the monetary base for 7 years on end and are only 3.5 years after that expansion from $800 billion to $4.3 trillion, we're already having to revert course. That does not seem healthy to me.
No, it's not healthy. We've never been in this situation before.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what happens next.
And so, and going back to the psychology of markets, so 08, that crash. Obviously, we had Occupy Wall Street. We had the bailouts. I just think this time around, if there is something on par with 08 or, God forbid, magnitudes of order worse, the collective psyche is going to be different. There's not going to be an Occupy Wall Street. There's going to be what is the tangible solutions that exist that we can turn to. And Bitcoin obviously presents a shining opportunity there.
I don't know. Does Bitcoin really dump off in that situation? Like, not that much, right? Like, who's selling? Who would be selling?
I wouldn't be.
Well, obviously we wouldn't be. But, like, I feel like we should put ourselves in the shoes of other people because we're more diehard.
Do you think people would revert, like, all the way down to, like, the necessities of land, water, and bullets?
I mean, we've already shaken out so many weak hands in the run from, like, 20 down. Like, I think it would have been really bad if it happened at, like, 18 or 15 or something. Right? We could have gotten into, like, a way bigger dump than what we've already experienced. But the fact that we've shaken everyone out, shaken out so many people over this last bear market, and it hasn't collapsed yet, like, it would actually, I guess, so what I'm saying is, like, I feel like if it collapses during a bull run, it'd be better, like, the beginning of a bull, the best time would be, like, the beginning of a bull run, right? It depends what part of Bitcoin cycle, like in the halvings and stuff.
It could time up perfectly where just right. Like an inflow of assets into Bitcoin at a time when the markets are turning makes it seem like a safe haven, people rush in.
Yeah, exactly. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. Like if we're already like in accumulation mode and moving up, like the halvings right now is like a year away. That if it hits at that point in the cycle, it could be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes. And we must also stress that we can't time this shit. We don't know.
Who the fuck knows? That's why stacking sats is a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not talking about timing the Bitcoin price, or I'm talking about talking like if shit hits the fan on the
oh, no. I've been calling this shit for like 5 years now. Yeah. So
that's what
it's due.
yeah, so no, that was about 20 minutes of macro talk. There's a lot going on in the world right now. There's a lot to be paying attention to.
Yeah, definitely. If you're thinking in your head, I just watched The Big Short. I'm going to go on one of those sites that lets me short the S&P 500 with Bitcoin. Don't do that. Yeah, no. Don't do that. You're just going to lose your Bitcoin.
No, especially if the Fed starts cutting rates and printing money again.
Yeah, it's just going to go up. So don't do that.
Definitely don't do that. All right, on the Bitcoin topics, let's start with GoTenna and TX Tenna and Richard Myers, what they've been working on.
Oh, this is a big deal.
Global Mesh Labs. They launched Global Mesh Labs, which is an initiative to sort of open source their Lot 49 protocol, which basically allows, or excuse me, incentivizes people using GoTennas to relay messages with Lightning Network payments.
It pays you to
relay messages.
Yeah, be a relay node in a mesh network.
Yeah.
Or a bridge node if you're connected to the internet and then push it out separately.
Yes. So
which is badass.
It's badass.
That's the main issue we have. Like, why, you know, plenty of people buy GoTennas. They're like, oh, I'll go to the ski slopes. I can connect to, you know, my friends who are within a couple miles. It bounces off of each other. Like, that's great. But then when you actually talk about using it as an alternative to ISPs that might be censoring you or might be unreliable, it becomes a real problem because you need people to be running like always on relay nodes and the bridge nodes, which go to the internet afterwards. Right. So this is a protocol that will hopefully, enable, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done, but hopefully enable people to get paid through Lightning, get paid Bitcoin to run relay nodes. Pretty fucking badass.
Yeah, and they didn't have to spin up a token to do it. They're using the Lightning Network.
He's been trying really hard. Richard's a good friend of both me and Marty. He's been trying really hard to make sure that there's going to be no token involved. He does need some Bitcoin improvements on Core's side. I know he needs Schnorr to be added. There's something else there that he needs to be added. It might be Taproot.
Sig hash no input.
There you go. Sig hash no input. Mm-hmm. And Schnorr.
Yeah.
But the, both those
are proposed.
They look like they're it's going to happen. So
yeah. No, shout out to Richard Myers and team. We will be sitting down with Richard in the next week or so to talk about this project in depth. So look out for that episode. Again, we talk about this a lot. Like decentralization is an ideal that we strive for, and if we want Bitcoin to be as robust as possible, we need these alternative transaction relay networks, and this strong incentive to run a relay node is an improvement in a parallel network to the ISP world.
I fucking love Gotenna. Okay, I fucking Kickstartered the original Gotenna, 4 of them. Received them, no encryption, 0 encryption. I emailed them. This is ridiculous. You need to have encryption on this. The whole point, like, one of the major use cases of this is like using it in like censored areas and stuff. It's really important to have encryption. And even if you don't use it in you don't want people just sniping your messages and shit. They're like, we're working on it. They come out with the second version with encryption. Kickstarter that, right? I get it. I'm like, this would be fucking awesome for Bitcoin payments. I tweet at them. This would be awesome for Bitcoin payments. A year later, they team up with Samurai and they bring Bitcoin payments. Like, that's fucking awesome. Now they're incentivizing mesh nodes with Lightning. Dream come true. Literally the best Kickstarter return I've ever gotten. The best.
Well, thank you for your contribution, sir.
Ah, I'm glad it happened. I'm glad they made their amount on the first
one. We need to figure out a way to get more Gotenna's going, like, or make it like a more normal thing, like just to carry it.
I run 3 nodes.
I know. You need to get me set up with a couple.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because it's just cool outside of Bitcoin, even, like, just being able to use the Gotenna app to send messages.
Yeah, it's super
off
useful.
Network. Yeah. Next up, we had a. Or this person had tweeted us. They tweeted out a thread on an at-home miner that they're using to heat their pool.
And we had a listener that poked us about it.
Yeah.
And showed us it.
Yeah, so the miner's enclosed in a metal box that's insulated. There's no heat and noise with foam, and it hangs in the workbench above this guy's workshop. And in the winter, it warms his workshop, and in the summer, it heats his pool.
Yeah, in the winter it warms his workshop and his greenhouse, and in the summer it heats his pool. And like, this is how
this was like a cool do-it-yourself at-home project. He did a thread of how he did it. He made like cut half his window out, put a piece of wood up, put some air vents out, ran like a hose with water going through it through the box to heat up.
But this is the future of Bitcoin mining. This is like every building that has a boiler will have ASICs in there that are mining, and because the main waste is the waste heat. So if you can repurpose that waste heat and use it for something else, you can dramatically lower your cost, and you're able to get Bitcoin relatively you can get it, you know, relatively anonymously, no KYC, nothing like that. You just get Bitcoin from the network. So I think that as mining plateaus, like, the problem right now is like you buy an ASIC and it goes obsolete within like a year and a half. Once those performance improvements start to plateau, you will start to see more applications like this. I mean, he's actually using GPUs, he's using graphics cards, but the idea is similar.
Yes, we're waiting for ASIC commodification, but it is getting here fast. You can't get much lower than 7 nanometers, right?
Yeah, they're at 7 now, but like they're. But there's like other ways you can do improvements too, besides just making the chip smaller. But he's in Germany. Like Germany, I'm pretty sure is some of the most expensive electricity in the world. So he's able to stay competitive because he is being resourceful and using that waste heat, and yeah, and making it not waste. He said at some points like his pool got too hot.
So. That's like, again, like the do-it-yourself nature of this seems like something that it could be like a weekend project.
Oh, no, that's cool, yeah. I mean, it looks like it's more than a weekend project, but yeah. A
couple weekends, at least.
It seems like it was iterative, you know, right? He was like, first I'm heating my workshop, right? And then he... But yeah, it's pretty cool. We're going to link to that.
Yeah, we'll link to that. And speaking of iterative, Zap's been iterating on their product, and they finally release an Android version.
Oh my god, I almost bought, and I was like, I was starting to feel like iPhone envy. Does it run on an, does Zap iOS run on an iPad? I assumed it runs on an iPad, right?
I would assume so. I don't have.
I almost
iPad.
Bought an iPad just to run Zap on it because I was feeling left out.
I love it on my phone.
Yeah, exactly. I was feeling really... So anyway, the Android Zap app, the cool story is that it was just a contributor who had been working on it for 3 months and didn't tell him.
It just came out and was like, hey, I've been working on this for a while. Here's the Android version of Zap. That's the crazy thing about the Zap community in particular. So Jack dropped a Medium post with the announcement, basically explaining how the Android app came to be and sort of touching on the community behind Zap. And it's all disparate people who just want to make it better.
Yeah, and then Jack didn't have an Android device, so he had Rockstar Dev like lead the testing.
Yep. And Rockstar Dev's he's known for working on BTC Pay Server, correct?
That's how I found out about him.
Yeah. So cool stuff going on there, and then on top of that, staying in the wallet / node space, Samurai has officially come out and announced that they're partnering with Noddle. They announced we talked about it last week that they open sourced Dojo. But now it
came. Yeah, you can run Dojo on any hardware.
Yeah, you can run Dojo on any hardware, but the specific Dojo Samurai device that they're going to release, they're now partnering up with Noddle instead of Bitseed. Looks as if Bitseed is going out of business. Became apparent on a recent Stefan Levera podcast episode with Samurai Wallet founder.
Great episode. You should give it a listen.
Definitely give it a listen. So yeah, they're teaming up with the Noddle guys, and you get a Noddle hardware, regular Noddle hardware. You'll have the option to run Dojo in that, and then they're teaming up for a special Samurai specific. And what are the specs with this? About two discs?
Well, the most important thing about the Samurai Noddle, first of all, two companies I fucking love, so this is fucking awesome. Second of all, the most important spec is that the Samurai Noddle will be red. People want the red box. They're going to get the red box. And then the second spec is it's going to be, there's going to be two SSDs in there. So it's going to be running in basically like a quasi RAID type of format, where one SSD will always be backing up the second one. So if you do like a firmware update or something like that, it will update on one SSD. And then when all is good, then it will update on the second one. So you always have a backup no matter what.
Pretty dope.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Shout out for the Samurai team. Happy for those guys. You guys have been working hard, building cool shit, Whirlpool, Stonewall, Dojo. It's cool to see everything come to fruition. They went through a lot of shit with that hosting their own server. Or having their own servers. And
they just raised a bunch of money, too. They raised 100K.
Raised 100K.
So congratulations on that.
Congrats on that. It'll be money well spent, I bet. And yeah, if you guys are buying Noddles or have other hardware you want to run Dojo on, it's open source now.
It's just that first of all, that episode with Stefan and Samurai Dev was fantastic. Just absolutely so fucking bullish. Like, we might actually have privacy here. Like, we're working on it. I am definitely going to buy one of those Samurai Noddles. Just need to have it. I think that's still a couple months out. And I'm just really excited about all this. I have not run Dojo yet because I don't have an SSD that's large enough. So it's on its way. And then I will talk about it next episode.
Yes. Sticking on open source announcements, a good friend of the pod, Neil Woodfine, announced that him and I'm gonna butcher this. Yame?
I can't pronounce shit.
Neil and Yame Verbal are announced their open source Cerebus protocol, which is out there as a guide for businesses who want to set up their own Bitcoin storage, as it should be. They're really pushing the not your keys, not your Bitcoin. And they're trying to help businesses with this Cerebus protocol develop the best practices they can to securing their own coins. So shout out to Neil.
I love this because it's non-custodial, multi-sig. This is where I think especially when we see like stuff like the FATFA regulations coming, I guess, I don't know if they call them regulations.
Guidelines
coming into play. Like, I think it's actually going to be, not only is it better for so many reasons to self-custody your own coins, but it will also be cheaper for businesses to do that because they don't have to deal with all that bullshit. And the best way to do that is through multi-sig. So it's really good to see stuff like this come out.
Yeah. Shout out to...
Yeah, Neil's awesome.
So. Yeah, Neil's awesome. He works at Blockstream. He's able to work on the Cerebus protocol on the side. Love the Bitcoin culture. It's just people building dope shit. Yeah, so go check that out. We'll obviously link to that. Then another cool thing that was dropped this week, good friend of the pod, very good friend of the pod, another beefy Bitcoin boy, Willow Byrne, added a cool little upgrade to the Jewel extension that he has, which is basically streaming spends.
Both him and his brother are fucking legends.
Right?
It's like fucking insane, man. Like, we were about to jump into record and he drops this.
Yeah. So it's called Jewel Allowances. It's only working on WebLN right now. It's got to be WebLN compatible, I believe, which is what Will's been building in his division that he announced when he did Lightning, when he did Chaincode Labs Lightning Week last year, I believe, last summer.
Basically, it recognizes that a payment's going through.
Yes.
Yeah, so the way it communicates with the extension.
Yes. And so right now on Jewel, if you upgrade, you can configure allowances. Like, if you're on a site that's Lightning Network compatible, like the dime bag on tftc.io, you can use the extension. If you hit buy a thought or get an invoice, the extension will automatically stream that payment and pay it for you.
Under your limit, whatever you set as your limit.
Yeah, so you set your limits, you set the parameters. You can say, I only want to be able to send a transaction out every X seconds, so you can avoid spam attacks and stuff like that. Really cool, pushing the UX forward. And this is something we've been talking about a lot, like streaming payments to Twitch players or something like that. Or
yeah, basically, like, imagine you set your limit for New York. Let's say the New York Times charges 1 cent an article in the future. They price it in sats or whatever it is. They charge 1 cent an article.
It's a terrible blog.
You set your allowance to 2 cents. Every time you click on a New York Times article, it basically just handling it in the background for you. It just pays them the 1 cent because you've allowed them to just take 1 cent from you. And then you don't see any paywall. It just automatically fucking does it.
Yeah.
That's fucking badass.
Making it seamless.
Yeah. Absolutely. I fucking love it.
No, this is, excuse me, the whiskey is burning my throat right now.
It's in a great glass, though, so it has got been that a great going glass. For us.
No, Will, we're lucky. Let's just give a shout-out to Willow Byrne here. We're lucky to have him and his UX prowess on Team Bitcoin building on the Lightning Network. His UX skills are incredible. As somebody who likes to fancy himself as somewhat of a UX nerd, Willow Byrne's work really, really gets me hot and bothered. I don't know if that's weird to say.
I mean, Will's our swan story, right? Because I remember listening to the episode with you, with both the brothers, with James and Will. And James was representing Bitcoin and Will was representing Ethereum at the time. And since he's come over, he's absolutely amazing. He's fucking legendary. He's just fucking killing it.
Yeah. And Will, if you're listening, we need to catch up on this pod. We need to have a sit down. Catch up about what you've been building with WebLN. Just as a note, mental note there.
Yes, please.
Matt, is it true that Leo and BNB will be worthless in 3 years?
Well, like, I hedged myself by saying 3 years. Like, people... But yes, I think so. Right? Like, why... Well, first of all, the real question is... Like,
You're falling into a tried and true trap in this space.
Well, the only reason I brought it up in the first place was because people were shilling the shit out of fucking Leo, and they were already shilling the shit out of BNB before Leo. So I felt compelled.
For the uninitiated out there, BNB is Binance's native token. They launched it through an IEO. Leo is Bitfinex's native IEO token. They launched it after their latest...
their ICOs.
Yeah, they're basically ICOs.
You can't just switch the C to exchange and change anything.
Yeah, but they go under the guise of they give you fee advantages when using them on each exchange, and they've been like the hot chick on the block.
They give you lower fees, and they give you... Well, they can't call them dividends because they don't want it to be a security, so they buy back and burn their tokens. When they make profit, which is non-auditable profit. Like, you don't know if Binance made as much money as they said they made. You don't know if Bitfinex said... We don't even know if Bitfinex actually raised $1 billion for Leo when they first started. Like, there's no proof of that. You have no idea. They could just say it. They're both centralized tokens, obviously. They're both tied to the individual exchanges. So my question, first of all, besides... I mean, all our listeners know how I feel about centralized crap. But... besides all that, do you think, what are the odds that Bitfinex and Binance are heavyweights in 3 years? Like, that's a long time, right? Like, I don't even think, I really originally was going to say 1.5 years, but everything goes longer than you think it's going to go. So I added another 1.5.
No, we've covered the rumor, or not even rumors, the news of... Binance starting to KYC accounts out of the blue, and then Bitfinex is obviously under the crosshairs of the U.S. government and the Department of Justice. So 3 years, we'll see. But again, it is a tried and true trap to fall into. These things survive a lot longer than.
But that's why I made it 3 years. I officially added. I mean, someone asked if I was willing to do the McAfee and bet my dick on it, and I told them no fucking way. Like, I'm not going to do that.
You don't want to eat your dick, dude?
And someone responded, I forget who responded, they're like, the market can be irrational longer than Matt can keep his dick. which I appreciated. You are correct. But my point is there's so many risk factors there, whether it's a hack, whether it's regulatory, whether it's compliance. I mean, the thing is, just having the token makes these exchanges are already regulatory targets, right? Once they start having their own token, they become even juicier targets, right? Because not only that, they're like issuing their own token, they're doing buybacks, doing all this shit. And also Binance like did all this other things to add so-called value to their token. Like, they make you like stake it to get access to other ICOs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You can get exclusive access to other deals and stuff like that.
But all this shit can be worthless and at any moment, you know, like, If the accounts get seized, stuff like that, it could just be completely worthless tomorrow, and you would never have a chance to get your money out, just zero. And like, that's a risk that I would never be willing to take, and I think that's a risk that people should realize. Like, when people say not your keys, not your coins, like, that also applies to if, like, you can't cold storage an exchange token. Like, if the exchange goes down, you're fucked. It's gone. It's zero. It's over. I thought it was important to make that clear.
What do you think of a future in which I could see Bitfinex succumbing to the law, finally catching up with it as they've been chasing? It seems like, again, they're in the crosshairs and people are determined to bring Bitfinex down in particular. Let's go back to Binance. So let's say Binance survives and they implement KYC and are okay with that, and their customers come okay with that, like BNB does survive, is it a useful token then?
So I think they have different risk factors, and that's why I did different. That's why I did 3 years. I just didn't want, you know, there's no room for nuance on Twitter, so fuck it. But with Bitfinex, they have more short-term risk factors. I mean, they're under the crosshairs. They literally had $850 million seized from them. So like, they must...
$850 million.
Yeah, so they must be freaking out about where they're keeping their money. I have nothing against Bitfinex. I'm impressed they've lasted this long.
And they do stick true to the cypherpunk ideals.
Yeah, but they've been like hanging on by a thread for like a long fucking time. And like, now that they issue this token, savvy, congratulations, guys. But I think it makes makes them even a bigger target. It adds even more risk to the whole situation, makes me want to stay away from it even more. So that can, like, at a moment's notice be whatever. The problem with BNB is
users will flock. Everyone said Dexes, Dexes, Dexes. And what they were saying was they thought the VCs of this industry thought Dexes meant self-custody. That's the important part. And that's what Binance Dex offers. They have this Dex they're rolling out. You get self-custody, yada, yada, yada. The real reason why Dexes are important is because of lack of KYC. People will flock to the exchanges that have no KYC. That's why Binance flourished. Binance will have to implement KYC. They've already started implementing KYC. We have people reporting like locked accounts, face scans required to access their funds, forced KYCs at like random people. And they will have to implement KYC, and they appear to be going in that direction. So when that happens, you know, that's what Bittrex had to do. That's what Polo had to do. As this happens, like, new upstarts will come up, whether they're DEXs or whether they're not. The important part is that there's no KYC. Those will be the exchanges that will be the new altcoin casino, the new place where everyone wants to read the troll box. You know, you don't have a like, Polo just brought back their troll box. It doesn't fucking matter. Like, you have full KYC.
And it looks like if my Twitter list serves me correctly, it looks like the next exchange behind Binance is Bexy, B-E-A-X-Y, Bexy?
No, they're brand new, and they're running a referral token system or something.
Are they?
A referral
system. I'm not endorsing this at all. I'm just trying to point out where the trend's heading.
But Bexy has full KYC. I already checked.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah, Never mind. The next upstart is going to be one that doesn't have KYC. What's interesting is HitBTC, I think, just launched their own token. Like, the new in thing is exchange tokens. So HitBTC just launched their token, I think. And I think either Bitfinex or Binance is doing, like, a tag team with them where, like, they list their token and the other guy lists their token. So we'll probably see more exchange tokens before we see less. But just keep in mind that these have higher risk than even your run-of-the-mill shitcoin or something. They're way more centralized. They are like literally the epitome of centralized.
Yeah, you take on the risk of that, the compliance risk of that exchange.
Yeah, they're one rate away from going to zero.
Yeah. So that was talking exchange coins with Matt Odell. Bearish. 3 years, Leo, BNB gone.
Well, the thing is, like, they might very well just, like, fucking soar, you know? So that's why I put 3 years there, because they're, like, playing games. Fucking CZ's just, like, restricting the supply left and right, adding new mechanisms to restrict the supply. Like, you can't, like, so that's why it's a longer term, whatever. But, like, intrinsically, they're fucking worthless.
This is a good segue into a conversation we had over lunch, too, and a good lesson to expound upon is the relationship between liquidity and price. We were talking about IOTA at lunch, and
fuck IOTA
obviously, but like when
Jaguar. You are
so IOTA had a price run obviously during that 2017 bull market, but the reason wasn't like
the reason was Tangle is the future, Marty.
Yeah, the reason was, as we were explaining at lunch today, or talking about at lunch today, like people who took their coins in their own possession, like put it into an IOTA wallet at one point, like couldn't move their coins for a month. So you had a bunch of...
It was longer than a month. It was months.
Months. So yeah. The reason IOTA pumped was because you had assets in wallets that couldn't move. So those people couldn't sell and the price pumped on exchanges. But really, probably like the biggest holders couldn't take
advantage.
It
was literally dysfunctional. And most people were such fucking idiots that they just never took their coins off exchange, so they never even knew, right? It was like the one time where, like, not your keys, not your coins.
Backfired.
You were actually better off leaving them on exchange, because if you sent them out to your own fucking wallet, you're running your own node, you were fucked.
Yeah, but that price, it's argued that price wasn't, like, reflecting fundamentals at all. It was a fact that was a completely incompetent protocol that couldn't function.
Yeah, right. The price wouldn't have gotten that high if you could sell. So don't, like, kick yourself too hard, I guess. Nah. You did buy IOTA, so kick yourself a little bit.
I did not buy IOTA. But
I'm just saying the
proverbial person.
The proverbial
that
you
to.
Who fucked himself. The reason I knew was because I had friends come to me and they were like, I can't spend my IOTA. Because, like, I, of course, was like, if you're going to buy the shitcoin, you need to transfer it to your own keys. It's really important. So, like, I ended up running my own node.
I restored their keys. Like, I tried to restore it for them, and it just
didn't work.
No, it didn't work. I think at one point, like, IOTA Foundation just, like, took all the coins. And then they had a KYC to get them, and they were like, well, I'm not going to KYC for that shitcoin. And then they just gave them to the IOTA Foundation.
Which,
they had a vulnerability and an upgrade, so they upgraded and they just swept all the vulnerable keys and just took all the coins, and they were like, you need to give KYC if you want them back.
It's a pretty douchey move.
Yeah, it was really fucked up. They are maximalists now, so we have that going for us.
Your friends or the IOTA devs?
The guys who, my two friends who were dabbling in IOTA, who I was helping them with. That's what I always say. It's like, you got to get burnt by the stove. You know, once you get burnt by the stove, you realize the stove's hot.
Yeah, IOTA was a very hot stove for some people.
Very, very hot.
That's it for the
list. And they're still running their shit. They're like big on partnerships. They always do the partnership thing.
Do they? Fuck yeah. IOTA. If you see an IOTA partnership, just ignore it. I don't know where I was going there.
Just ignore it. Tweet stamp.
Tweet stamp. Tweet stamp, very great tool on twitter.com. Make sure you include the word stamp in your tweet. That's all we got to talk about this week. What, you got anything to riff on here? We're a little bit over an hour.
Yeah, it's something I want to talk about. Oh, Abra. I think I had a lot of people DM me. I think the stock, buying stocks with Bitcoin thing is really useful.
Boss.
Yeah. We're multiple different countries. It's just really difficult to buy U.S. equities and like basic ETFs and stuff. So that's like a decent use case. Like, I still think that they are probably going to get fucked by regulators, but if they don't, that would be badass.
Shout out to Abra.
Yeah.
Paving the way. And that's again, looping back to the macro talk earlier in this episode, and I wrote about it in the Bent this morning too. Like, we're at a crossroads here. Do we want to allow, basically the system that exists in China, digital panopticon, to be exported to the rest of the world, or do we want to work hard to create open, free systems for future generations? And again, with all that macro talk, with all the tumult that's going on around the world right now, in different locations, different scenarios, I think the opportunity that Bitcoin and other open source projects like Gotenna present is a golden opportunity that we should not squander. Don't be afraid. I mean, that's the reason I'm bringing this up, is a lot of people are saying Bitcoin's inevitably going to be criminalized, and like I said in the Bent, like, I don't think we should just bend the knee and roll over so easily.
Well, I think it will inevitably be criminalized.
Oh, yes.
I've been operating under this assumption. If you operate under the assumption that Bitcoin will inevitably be criminalized and Bitcoin has value and will continue to accrue more value, then really you come up with, I need to get as much Bitcoin as possible, right? And like that's been my thesis. It's only till recently where I've been to the point where I still don't think America is going to criminalize Bitcoin. I just don't think we have our shit together, and I think too many rich people will own it by the time anyone realizes what the fuck's going on besides Brad Sherman.
Yeah. Brad Sherman.
He's just rolling up, he's at night, he's like, he can't fall asleep, you know, he's like, oh my god, they don't realize.
The Bitcoin's still going on, that internet money, it's still proliferating.
You definitely saw on like Twitter and shit that we were all like, he's absolutely right, that's exactly what we're doing.
The Brad Sherman staying up at night. That gives me pleasure thinking of that. Not pleasure, but it makes me happy.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I hope he has many sleepless nights. Yeah. That would be nice.
This is the first time we've ripped a bunch of whiskey on a rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's because we got these dope-ass glasses from White Rabbit BTC.
Shout out to White Rabbit again. Shout out to you freaks for listening. Shout out to our contributors. Shout out to Cash App.
Shout out to Bitcoin.
Shout out to Bitcoin. This is it's a fun time to be alive. There's a lot of shit going on in the macro landscape as well. Stay humble. Stack sats. I just stole your tagline there, man. I'm sorry.
I fucking love it. Cheers, guys.
Peace and love. Pick